listening to Raíces Verdes, a platform dedicated to validating, archiving, and sharing the experiences of Black, Indigenous people of color in connection to the environment. My name is Samara La Fresa de Rancho, creator and host of Raíces Verdes. And I acknowledge that I'm recording on occupied Snohomish territory, part of the Coast Salish people's land today, also known as Lynnwood, Washington. I am really excited for our guest today. I think that might have been one of the first few accounts I followed on Instagram through the podcast Instagram, and just been like keeping up with their work for a while now. And I'm excited to finally have them on the podcast. So today we have Alejandro Lozano, Mexican immigrant, outdoors filmmaker, media content creator for Latino Outdoors Nonprofit. Hi, Alejandro.
Hi, how are you? Good morning.
Yes, good morning. And I know it's a little bit later for you, so I'm excited to, you know, make some time today. You know, I've been like following your work, but don't know too much about you personally. So I'm excited to ask you this question. When you hear the term Raíces Verdes, what comes up to you? You know, what is your story to the environment? What is your family?
That's so powerful. I actually love that, those two words, Raíces Verdes, because it's not just the roots, but it's in intersectionality with environment, right? So I really like that part. And, you know, it's funny because like in the U.S., I start learning about us as immigrants and our parents and our families and how we are also environmentalists, because the how we integrate that in the U.S. is very different. Like when I moved to the U.S., I learned that I don't know, like people, it's like a very white thing to do or a very privileged thing, or like the focus or how it's being perceived is something like out of range for most people, or I don't know. And so that was very impressive for me, because it's like, well, we're we're so connected to nature and to environment and to all these things back in any country in Latin America, like it's very normal. But out here, it's something kind of like out of, it's not accessible, it's not something that it's on the regular basis conversation. It's different. So I guess for me and my family history or my family story in connection to environment, it's probably the first thought that comes to my mind is my dad. Growing up, he became vegetarian when he turned 12 years old. And I think by the age of 15 or 16, he was already like teaching yoga classes and was really into spirituality with wow. intersection with environment. And so when I was like 5 years old, six, I remember my dad would play me like VHSs of Vivaldi, the Four Stations. And so it's like these videos with like epic music in the background, with shots of like ants and animals and mammals and ocean life and all these things. And it was just like, that was the first I remember impact as a kid that I received in my life. And it was all nature with music and environment. And then he will force us, me and my brother, to go on these hikes to the woods, like on the weekends, super early. Like he was really trying to like put that on us, like hey, nature, and then / spirituality / like healthy or mental health and all these things. And for me, in my perspective, like consciously, I said like that didn't really affect me until later, or like I didn't, because I remember if anything that was the opposite, like it was trying to force that on us. And I remember starting hating it and hating the outdoors and hating going hiking. You know, like that's what happens most of the times.
Yeah.
But for some reason, I kind of followed that path without him, because my dad left the house when I was 6 years old. But then by the age of 10 or 12, I was starting doing meditation by myself. And I remember there was this funny video on Discovery Channel where they would talk about the environment. And it was a very powerful short clip of like 3 minutes where it's like, well, humans are destroying the environment. I remember like sobbing every time that I would see that commercial. It was so powerful. And I tried to look it up because I wanted to see it again on YouTube. It was like recently when YouTube started. And it was not there. Like I could only find it in English, but there was no video on Spanish or any subtitles or anything. And I remember I was like 13, 14 years old. And I was like, well, people need to see this. Like, this is an important message. So I remember, I don't know what tool I used, but I downloaded the video and then I put subtitles in Spanish and I uploaded it again. And like, because there was not much content back in the day in YouTube, there, right. It got a lot of views and I was so excited that people was seeing that.
Oh my God, so you went viral before going
live. Yes. Yeah. And I remember sending that to my dad as like, kind of like a pro. I was like, hey, you know, I'm also in this fight with you. And this is also something that matters to me too. And that was kind of like my first interaction with kind of environment and roots, like, cause it was my dad and it was our story as human beings in connection with the land. And so, I don't know, it was a message from Discovery Channel. I had nothing to do with me, but you know, the we all live in this earth, so it's everybody's issue. So right. I think that was kind of like my first connection to it.
No, that's so interesting that you bring up like this narrative with your dad and growing up with him, because that is such a core part to the topic today about toxic masculinity, you know. And I think your story is actually sadly not usually the norm of how people connect to the environment or the relationship that they have in this like colonial patriarchal society, right? And mm-hmm. So getting into that, like you had this experience, but I'm sure you've been seeing the counter experience. Like, how would you describe the way we see toxic masculinity show up in like the outdoors? Like, how would you define that in this other way?
I love this question. Damn, this is like my heart started beating fast because it's all about like conquering this shit, you know? It's like there's already a system in this world that is ruled, of course, by nature. And then us as powerful men try to conquer shit. It's like we come here and it's like, no, this is a resource that we can use. And we never ask anybody to use it. We never like respectfully engage with it, you know? And I'm talking about this toxic masculinity because, of course, before indigenous communities and other folks, they've been in connection and respecting the system that it already exists. But I think that's how it starts to apply when we started to think that that shit was ours.
Right.
It's not, that doesn't work that way. And of course, that can translate now to millennial times on, I don't know, going on hikes and stuff like that with all this, I don't know, weird rules and who owns the space or who can be in those spaces. And just, I think there's infinite representations on how toxic masculinity applies in, I don't know, okay. In the outdoors.
Maybe for someone that's like very one-on-one on this stuff, like, you know, they just really enjoy going in the outdoors and they're like, what does mm-hmm. gender have to do with it? Like, I guess, how would you just like baseline say it? I mean, I guess you kind of mentioned like the aspect of conquering shit. Is there like any other way, especially in media, right? Cause that's like your platform in media, mm-hmm. like in videos or in photos, do you see other ways that like toxic masculinity just like really takes over?
I don't know. Like, for example, one thing that comes to my head too, like in my hometown, and that recently too, when I went, I think I did a backpacking trip on, what was it called? Desolation Wilderness in California. And I was walking through, I think it was our second day walking through the, you know, through the backpacking trail. And it was so impressive. There was this huge group of men with their kind of like 4x4, I don't know what they are, like carts or motorcycles or something.
Oh, like quads. Quads,
I think that's the word. And they were in this huge boulder. There was like 20 of them with their their big ass pickup trucks and all this thing. And you can hear like all the yeehaw and like, yeah, and like everybody's super wasted and like blasting music. And it's like, you guys are not understanding how to connect with this place. It's just like, it just sounded so, so intrusive and so wrong. And I think that's one way, like, well, we own this place, we do whatever we want with it. We like the noise and the things that you're bringing and like motor vehicles and just destroying completely like the system that is going on there. Like, I bet all these animals just like just went hiding and like, okay.
Right. And it's like, it sounds scary to me. Like, if I ran into like a big like group of men, yeah, like that, like I'd be kind of scared as like a woman if I was like on my own or with other women. So like, that also makes it like a different situation. It's like you've now made other people on the trails uncomfortable.
Yeah. And you know, like those places, there's not much noise. And luckily they were on the other side of the lake, but at nighttime it sounded so close because there's no other noises around. So it was just like they were partying hardcore in the outdoors. It was so crazy. It's just, wow, oh, these guys think they own the place.
Being up here in the Pacific Northwest, I feel like I see that vibe a lot, especially the college I went to. Like, a lot of the, we didn't have a Greek system, so people didn't party like that, but it was more like, let's party outdoors, like do drugs outdoors, and like, yeah, that's cool, I feel like, to an extent. But like you said, where does like the line draw of like, now you're,
yeah, making
both nature and other people uncomfortable, especially with men.
Yeah, and it was like drifting on like granite boulders in the outdoors. It's just like crazy for me. It's like, what are you doing? Where does this come from? Like, get in the water, get wasted there. I don't know. Like, it's just like add to another extent, just like drifting and leaving tire marks on beautiful granite. It's just, I can't even describe that.
Well, I think like something that I've noticed in your social media, or like even some of the videos you put together, you know, you often go on like outdoor adventures with different groups of men, and usually, you know, they're all men of color, but yes, you always have like the most beautiful like post about love and like vulnerability and like sharing your time together, you know, so like very much different from what we were just describing. So like, you know, are you doing that just because like of the way you were raised, like with your father, like you kind of mentioned, or like what is the message you're trying to bring across by like showing, you know, men of color, especially like hanging out together in the outdoors and like being really soft instead of like this aggressive sort of?
Yeah, that's a good one too, because people have asked me that question. I think it's not me trying to share. I think it's me on my own growth and path, you know, because of course, I came from a very masculine society with a lot of social pressure and standards and all these things. And I was playing that game too. Like, I was trying to be like extremely masculine and I don't know, trying to play that kind of like escalera and like social status or whatever. Mm-hmm. But then with nature, I also learned that it's okay to be vulnerable. It's okay to be feminine. And there's a lot of that in compassion in nature and in the outdoors. So I start discovering that part of myself. It's like, oh no, I'm also very feminine. And actually throughout dance too, because I start teaching hip hop in the university. And then at some point I start teaching heels classes. So I was like wearing heels and dancing. And it was also kind of like that reconnection to my feminine side. It's like, whoa. Because it was a whole, I was like, well, am I gay? What's going on? Why am I doing these things that other men are not doing? But again, because of that social pressure, it's like, well, no, men are designed to be this way. If you're not this way, then the only other alternative is that you're gay. Right. And so that took me a while. It was a long process, but then it's like, no, fuck that. Like, I'm still a man, and men can dance and wear heels and be feminine as fuck, and that's fine. But I don't think it was until I moved to the U.S. when I felt more comfortable and more accepted in that way without being as judged. And then just enjoying that with my people in the U.S. and California, being like, oh yeah, there's also men like me that are also of color that are feminine as fuck and love their flowers and love their like going to the outdoors to see different insects and like all these things. And it's like, wow, this is new to me. And that's great. I'm reconnecting to that part of myself that was kind of like shut down because of society. And I think that's what I've been sharing like my own experience and happiness that there's a space for that and it does exist. And so also most of people that follow my social media are still from my hometown. And I think I do create a lot of impact in them. Sometimes negative, sometimes positive, but I think also just sharing that with so much happiness and joy, it's impossible to not like think about it and not feeling like it's hard to hate it when it comes right. with so much love and happiness.
Right. And so, you're literally killing them with love. I love it.
Exactly. Because I'm not even sharing like, you should do this. You're wrong. Look, it's just, like, hey, look at me. I'm loving my friends. I'm kissing them. It's amazing. It's like, and so, yeah, of course, a lot of comments from my hometown, they were like, oh, so are you gay? So what's up? Is that your boyfriend? Or like, why will you post? Why will you like, because I will make appreciation posts where I'll post a hugging a friend and like a long script saying like how much I love him and I appreciate him. It's like, is that your boyfriend? It's like, no, that's my best friend. It's like, but why do you talk to them like they're your boyfriend? It's like, well, it doesn't matter. Like love is love. And, you know, I love them the same. And it's funny because most of those questions came from women, which are also in that, you know, like the social pressure places. That's my hometown. It's just like everybody's conditioned to be that way.
Yeah, and I was actually going to ask because I know you're back. I don't know if you're back in your hometown, but I know you're back in Mexico. Do you feel like now maybe from being away a little bit and, you know, like you said, connecting with all these folks in like California and whatnot, like, do you feel like going back now, you feel a little bit different, that you can like be more of yourself because you've gone through this journey and like now being back is not as like you don't feel as much that social pressure, I guess. How has it been like being back now?
Yeah. I'm back in my hometown and the pressure is exactly the same, but I think people have realized that that doesn't matter and you should be yourself. Of course it does transmutes a little bit because it's like you still can be yourself, but still not fully. but I don't care. And like, I've been receiving this comment. It's like, well, it seems like you don't give a fuck about what people think. So I love that about you. And so I think that was one of the lessons that I got in the US is like, just being myself. That's what matters the most. And so here, the pressure is the same, but I'm not going to change who I am for everybody. And I love it because I receive also these comments. It's like, I wish I was like you, or like, I love to see your stuff because if you remind me that I just need to be happier, you remind me that I just need to be myself and not care about what everybody thinks. And it's like, great. That also pushes me to share more of my personal life and just sharing more love because it's like, it is creating an impact and people are thinking about those things.
Mm-hmm. No, definitely. So switching a little bit, but obviously this is all connected, you know, you also started your own indie podcast, El Cuarto de Atrás, which I like the name. I don't know why it's just so abstract. and at some point, you know, with like your friends and in the episodes that I've listened to and that are available, there's like a strong focus on mental health, which I really like. And, you know, you've kind of mentioned that mental health has been connected to your outdoor experience throughout the podcast. So like, I guess more so, what do you see as the connection between mental health and toxic masculinity? Because I think it's another man, right, that you're like doing the podcast with?
Mm-hmm. Correct. I think, well, it's just so connected. Like if you're leaving this, I think, again, going back to the social pressures and standards or like expectations, you know, if you're trying to fulfill that instead of your own happiness, of course, there's going to be issues with your mental health because you're not satisfied with who you are. You don't recognize yourself. You're not loving yourself. You're loving or trying to be something that you're not. And so, of course, at some point, mental health is just not going to be fulfilled or healthy. And so I think that's happening to a lot of people right now because, you know, they're trying to fulfill the expectations of society or of their families. And they kind of like put their own happiness in the back. And then they have all these insecurities and anxiety and depression. And it's like, well, you have just forgot about yourself. And so I think in this podcast, my friend and I, we talked about this because we both experienced depression and we both experienced like breaking out of the bubble and just be ourselves. And it's also a really cute feminine human being that I love. So it's like, it's a great space also for us to be her from another vulnerable person, vulnerable person. So it's like, I don't know, we share all these things and it's a great space for it. And I think the focus or the people that we're aiming this to is, again, hopefully for men that are having issues or with that, or asking themselves what's up or why they feel uncomfortable, so that they can hopefully relate to the stress around toxic masculinity and see the connection with mental health. So then maybe, I don't know, other people can be like, well, yeah, I should try to do more of that. I should try to like be more vulnerable with my friends, hugging them, kissing them, crying, and all these things that are like basic needs for humans.
Right. As soon as you break the barrier with like crying with other people, then I think it becomes a little bit easier.
Yeah. And that's another thing with like going back to the other one with my friends in the outdoors. It's funny because some of them that I go outdoors with, they were very masculine men at the beginning. And I love doing that because I see men that are like, I don't know, I have this touch or this eye where I see men that are forcing that masculine side of them so much. And it's like, okay, you're not that masculine. You're trying too hard to be masculine, but you're not. So let me give you a fucking kiss. Come here. And then slowly just like breaking them apart and like all this feminine side starts to flourish. And it's so beautiful to see the change. And like there was two specific friends that they changed drastically. Like they were all of a sudden, they were so loving and so caring and communicating feelings and like 360 change. And it's like, you see, and I love doing that to people because it's like, dude, you're also very feminine and you don't have to put this mask on of like tough and cut and I don't know, just like a rock that is no feelings. It's like that's right. Not, you're not being happy. I can see it right now.
Yeah. And I feel like also because so much of society tells men like not to have a lot of like physical touch unless it's with their like romantic partner, like not even hugs, like things like that. And even, you know, in our culture, like we do like the cheek kiss and stuff when we see people, we don't do that like between men. And of course, all of this physical touch with consent always. But I do think it's funny when like once like a man allows himself to like really be hugged or like really be cared for by like other friends and people that are not romantic partners, they like really open up. Like I feel like sometimes that's all we need, you know, is like a hug or like you said, a kiss on the cheek or like just
seriously.
And that just like opens up what you've been, because it's so fragile, right? At the end of the day, like it's such a fragile thing that con poquito, like it just breaks. So
yeah, I think that's it, because I don't think they ever been exposed to it. So when I like come from the back and just hug them softly and give them a kiss, or like whenever I say hi to all my men friends, I always, it's like a cheek kiss, always, and like stuff like that, like giving them a massage or like touching their hair, things like that. I think that makes a click on them. And it's just like just one single caricia, you know, like just one touch enough, because like they never experienced that. It's like, oh, this feels good. And it's my friends. And yes, I'm not having romantic feelings for them, but that's really sweet. And I can feel your love. So let me do that back to you. And all of a sudden they're also doing it. It's like, okay, if I do this to you, then I can also do that to my dad and my cousin and my other friends. Like, yes, welcome to the crew.
Yeah. And it's funny too, because like, I mean, this could be a whole nother like longer conversation, but I think for a long time in history, like men have been out in the outdoors by themselves, you know, like cowboys and like traveling and like doing all this work outdoors by themselves. So it's probably sad to know that like in a lot of those instances, people were so afraid to like show that, you know, like show fear and show like vulnerability after being, you know, in who knows how many days out in the woods by yourself.
Yeah, that made me think of like the Wirrarica community down in Mexico, because they have, I don't know if you seen their trajes and their vestimentas, they're like so colorful, and they wear these like cute little hats with like all these colors hanging down, and almost like a big shirt that almost looks like a vestido, and it's like all todo bordado with colors, and it's like, damn, that's like hella feminine, and that's very cute. And all the men look like so sweet and cute with those things. And it's like back to our roots. Right. And it's like we missed that somewhere.
Right. No, it is so interesting seeing other cultures do that because, yeah, like my partner, they're Arab. And so sometimes for like different celebrations they do, they also wear clothing that is a lot more like, I guess you could say, feminine in the standards of fashion, because they'll wear also like really long shirts, like you said, almost look like dresses called thobes mm-hmm. and stuff. And so it is really beautiful to see that played out and that is they're especially used, you know, for like celebrations or religious.
Yeah.
Okay, so lastly, I really want to ask you, you know, about your film and media work that you do, Don Aguacate Films, also love the name. and so you're all about, you know, documenting culture and environment and the outdoors. And I just really like bringing all that together. But what would you say is like the lens from where you're documenting stories from? You know, like how does this intersect with your identity and your journey? Like, I think there isn't a lot of, you know, men of color that are documenting stories of the outdoors of other people of color. So I just want to know, like, mm-hmm. what's your perspective coming from that?
It's a mix of things. I think first of all, it's just, again, like the love for the outdoors and slash spirituality, because the way I connect with the outdoors is mostly spiritual. And like, I want to protect it with everybody else and just everybody getting the page. But I noticed in my journey that I don't have a powerful presence. I don't have a powerful voice, but I do have powerful feelings. and I can transmit that through my lens, like using the right angles and the right soundtrack. And the like, I can create that mood so that people can perceive the world and the environment and nature the same way I do. And then that's when I learned it's like, well, that's my goal. It's like that my mission is to, you know, work around environmentalists through the camera, through film. And it's funny because like full circle goes back to that time when I worked with that video of Discovery Channel, putting subtitles right. on it. Simple as that. It's like, okay, I've been always behind kind of like the camera work or editing and all those things. And then I think the people of color in the outdoors came when I moved to the US too, because I also learned that side of environmental part issues and struggles, because it's like, wow, only white people are getting the lens on this. And, you know, we POC been out here before and we've been doing this for years and decades and hundreds of years. So it's like, what's up? I know all these people and they're not getting the same focus, the same lens. And I have the skills, I hang out with them, and they're doing powerful work. So, you know, I can, that's my tool and that's my mission. So I'm going to be of service so they can still do the same work, but now it's being observed by other people. Just like creating more content, because right. people is doing it out there anyways. And there's so many of us doing this work, but they're not getting attention. And so yeah. I think we need more POC filmmakers that record more POC people doing these things, because they're out there.
No, for sure. I feel like, yeah, like you said, when I first came into this podcast now almost 2 years ago, I was like, oh, there's not going to be that many folks. Like, I'm going to be kind of in a small community. And then as I started looking through, I was like, oh, shoot, there's been like a lot of us. And there's been folks doing this longer than I have. And it's dope. And we're just, like you said, not getting the same attention. And like,
yeah.
our stories are just not getting documented, which, you know, with the history of colonialism, like our stories really need to be documented. Like so many information was like burned physically or like, you know, destroyed physically, but it's obviously like in our DNA and like our ancestry.
Yeah. And it's powerful and interesting because like even in the circle, now that I'm with the circle of the POC environmentalists in the US, it's like, whoa, there's so many of us. There's a lot of work being done. And sometimes I feel redundant just resharing stuff that another 20 folks in my circle have shared before. But then, man, it's like, when you see the full picture, the bigger picture. One time we went to Nevada City to do a presentation on this film that we did with Save the Redwoods League in California. And the whole, so we played this film about conservation of the redwoods, and they put four of us that are POC filmmakers on it, so we could talk about it. But then the people in the crowd, they were all white. And after seeing the video, they came out with the question and answer time. And my God, the questions. And after that time, I was like, okay, I think we're doing a lot yet. But when I hear these questions, we need more. we need to be more of us and need to create way more content and putting more things out there and having way more conversations, because this is definitely not enough. And so, yeah, there's a lot of work to be done. And I think my passion for the environment and, you know, my skills with the camera is just like, oh, that's my skill. Use me, please. Whoever is doing something, let me go and record you, because it needs to be out there.
So do you have any words of advice for maybe, you know, Black or Indigenous people of color listening to this that maybe have been wanting to like start up a little bit of documenting, either with photography or video? Like, do you have any advice on how to kind of get that started, you know, given that we don't always have access to some of these tools? I mean, you started your journey on YouTube, right? So like, yeah. What advice for folks that maybe want to get into this?
I mean, one thing that I learned through video is that, you know, the main source of good quality is, at the end of the day, the creativity. So, and you already have a different perspective of things. So you already have it. Like, the tools will come later and they're not as important. The important part is, you know, to have the skills or have the creativity, that different perspective. And another thing is that it's like, I feel like at some point I was feeling that I was not going to be good enough, because it's something that I started doing recently and I didn't go to school for that, and all these things that are like bringing me down. And I'm like, oh, maybe I'm not good enough for this, right? But what I learned in my journey is also like, it actually, you know, my perspective or my vision is even more powerful than the rest, because the rest is the normal and I have a different perspective that needs to be out there. And like another POC friend exposed once, it's like, well, don't try to fit in how you tell the stories. Like, don't try to tell the stories like the Hollywood version of, like, the white version of telling the stories, because we're done with that. Like, that doesn't work. And so we come up with the ways that we want to tell the story, so that the story has been told differently and focus on different things that have not had the same attention before. And so, I don't know, like we shouldn't be tweaking the way we perceive things or the stories that we want to tell in order to fit in to what it's like a good content, you know? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I think at the end of the day, like you said, skill can be learned in a lot of ways, but I think like that storytelling part, and like you were saying earlier about your own film, like really trying to bring emotion into it, I think that like just can't be taught, you know? And I think for Black Indigenous people, like we have so many stories, again, to like our ancestry and to like stories that have just been hiding in us, you know, that I think those are things you can never learn. So like just bringing that forward, I think will really, you know, create a different way of documenting our stories. So kind of to, you know, just wrap it up, is there anything else you want to say about toxic masculinity, about filmmaking, or really anything else that you want to give to the listeners before we close up?
I don't know. I think just one message is to remind ourselves to connect with who we really are and try to just enjoy our lives and the people around us, and not trying to let anything from the outside impact us or how we live or how we experience life. And just a good way to do that is connecting with nature. I think nature is the greatest teacher. And so just pushing people to remind to be outdoors, to spend some time with nature, because that's home, then that's our heart.
Thank you so much, and thank you for being on the podcast. And of course, thank you all for listening to Raíces Verdes, a podcast for healing our relationship to the earth as Black and Indigenous people of color. To stay updated on future episodes and connect, the Instagram is at Nuestras Raíces Verdes, website nuestrasraicesverdes.com. And of course, you can listen to the episode on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, and everywhere else. Thank you.